CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. In Moscow, Victory Day, celebrating 1945 and the victory over the villains, the Hitlerites, but at the same time celebrating a brutality that is evident in Ukraine and other remarks made by the Kremlin leadership, Vladimir Putin. At the same time, in Europe, the European Union, which is a product of the best thinking to come out of 1945, is asking questions of itself and its purpose here in the 21st century. One of those questions is available on Strategic Europe, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace's newsletter, asked by Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. And it speaks to the balance of the century. It's a hard question. Is the EU ready for further enlargement? The EU is made up of prosperous countries who have great ambitions. They move with unanimity, however, an unusual concept to American ears because our Congress is always turning on very small margins. The European Union works on the collective agreement of a policy to go forward, and therein lies both a strength and a vulnerability. I welcome Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief, to comment on the remarks from her colleagues about, is the EU ready for a larger EU, especially to the east? Judy, a very good day to you. This question has been around for some time, and Europe right now is skating along the edges of a recession. Asking this question can make people doubt whether they want to pay for somebody else's excesses, you know, debts or things like that. Is it now a question that's pressing the EU during this contest with Russia? Or is this a time in which this question is muted? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your great show. No, it's not muted. It's a big issue. And in some ways, it's not going to go anywhere until all the member states decide that enlargement has to happen. And but Europe must be more integrated. And just listening to all the voices here in Berlin and across Europe, one wonders that if you wait for integration, more different voting systems, you know, will enlargement ever happen? So there's a big debate now that should they press ahead with enlargement and introducing the reforms or do the integration? I wonder, can actually both happen?
Yes, enlargement would involve bringing in states that are now candidates, I don't know the special language, looking to join the EU. There are some important metrics that you must meet. One is in terms of debt and government financing. Another is in terms of justice. Although those guidelines have been shaved or adjusted recently, correct? I mean, there's been some practical application of the high ideals.
There's been absolutely practical application of the high ideals, as you suggest. But the criteria for membership has become rigorous. But it's very tough in these countries, whether we're talking about Moldova, we're talking about Ukraine, and maybe Belarus and Georgia down the road. You've got to realize that the ability to absorb thousands of pages of EU legislation, what's called the acquis communautaire, of the size of water pipes, of sanitary conditions and how to deal with animals. It is enormous. And the capacity, the physical capacity of the civil servants to do this is really not there. So I think there has to be an understanding that these countries will need enormous amount of help. And actually, the EU should stop saying that Ukraine and Moldova will take 10 or 15 years. Just get on with helping them and send over your brightest in the diaspora to speed up the enlargement. The sooner the better that these are tied to the European Union, the better. This will be a great success in making Europe whole and free.
You've asked your colleagues, and I go first to a remark from Vilnius, Denis Sinusa, associate expert at the Eastern European Studies. Why Vilnius? Because it's within walking distance of the frontier with the Russian aggressor. And no state is more vulnerable than the Baltic states. Mr. Sinusa answers that the enlargement must include the eastern part of Europe, Eastern Europe, and he And he also mentions the Western Balkan countries, or six of them, are ready or in the process of EU accession. But he also mentions Turkey. All right, East, Balkans, and Turkey, three levels of possible expansion. I want to start with the hardest one first, Turkey. Is that a credible addition to the EU, given the centrality of Turkey in the conflict in the Black Sea Basin?
And given the centrality of Turkey in NATO, by the way, but Turkey under President Erdogan hasn't done himself any favors in terms of how he's dealt with undermining the rule of law, putting into prison opposition people, dissidents, critics, and so on. But if Turkey is on the list and has been a candidate member for so many years, one has to ask, where does Europe end? And if you're going to make a commitment, as the European Union have done to some of the Western Balkan states, we have to see it through. And we have to be open and put pressure on these countries. If you want to join the EU, you subscribe and sign up to these values. We have enough problems with Hungary and Poland who are already in the EU. But Turkey is important. And it's important for the civil society and the younger generation who look to Europe.
Another part of Mr. Sinusa's recommendation is the countries that are neither Balkan nor Turkey. That would be Moldova, a very small country in the Black Sea Basin, and Georgia, a very small country that is in disorder because of the Russian aggression of many years past. Now, those are tests of anyone to bring those two countries in. What is the thinking about extending the EU to the least among us?
Moldova isn't a big issue. Okay, it is the contested territory called Transnistria, which Russia is using as a kind of leverage over Moldova, the pro-Western young government there. But Moldova is a neighbor of Romania. Romania supports its entry into the EU. It's got a candidate status now. It needs all the help it can get to get into the EU and get closer to NATO. And I think that there's a realization, particularly by the bigger member states led by Germany, that Moldova is very important to bring much, much closer to the EU. It shouldn't be an issue. It's a small country. Yes, they will have voting rights, but this is one of the perks of joining the EU, and it's one of the rights. But Moldova is waiting, and the longer it has to wait, the more vulnerable it will become to Russian pressure and intimidation.
Yes, it's a puzzle, too, about the eastern states, the Western Balkans. Many of them are the product of the disorder in the late 20th century, the tragedy, the mass murder. Is that still an issue for the EU, the unanswered questions about those years?
There are two issues involved, the political will of the EU member states. Several of them, the Dutch, probably the French as well, don't want to enlarge to the Western Balkans. The other issue is that there is actually unfinished business of this war. One is Bosnia, which is a totally dysfunctional state in which the EU has an enormous financial, economic and political role. And there's the whole thorny, controversial, difficult historical issue between Kosovo and Serbia. Serbia will not recognize the independence of Kosovo. And by the way, several EU member states won't recognize the independence of Kosovo. It would be just unleash so much energy if those EU member states like Spain and Cyprus recognize the independence of Kosovo and just bring the region closer to the EU. It's not a happy area. It's not a happy region. Broken promises by the EU, giving grounds to manipulation, whether it's China or Saudi Arabia or Russia or Turkey, and corruption and a disillusioned civil society. The decline can be stemmed if the EU take the brave decision, say, you're going to join, and give them a date.
All right. I've dealt with the three troubled areas that have open questions about whether they're ready to join the EU. But I want to step back and look at the EU as in general, how it thinks about itself. Is this a trading bloc? Is this a community of virtue-minded people? Or does it want to be a world power? Can you tell, Judy?
Its strength is its economy, its economic and trading bloc. But psychologically and philosophically, viewed from outside, it's a political magnet for countries in the East and the South and the Western Balkans that want to join. Don't even call it a club, which is derogatory. It's an organization of ideas, of values, of prosperity, of the possibilities of growth, of opportunity, of perspective. It's still there. The optimism is still there. It sells itself very badly. But the European Union, as we go through the commemorations and the celebrations, whichever way you look at it, the end of the Second World War, the European Union grew out of the rubble of the Second World War, and now it must capitalize and reap the benefits of what this united and peaceful Europe means.
The aggression by Moscow, the hate-filled words that we hear from Vladimir Putin, does that make the EU stronger or weaker? Do you measure that this is a time that the EU is being tested?
Well, the EU has been tested. It was tested during the former Yugoslavia war. It came out very badly on that because it was so divided over how they saw it. It was tested over COVID, tested over the Euro crisis, and it's severely tested now over Russia's second invasion of Ukraine, which took place over a year ago. They've held together. I think it is changing the perception inside the EU that the EU must become a strategic actor, must become a political actor, and must follow things through. It must not go back to the old status quo ante if and when this war has ended. The war has changed everything, and the EU has to change as well. And it has to change by becoming more integrated in terms of foreign policy, on economic policy and fiscal policy, and actually more integrated in a completely different way by enlarging and bringing democratic sovereign states into this integrated Europe.
And the final question about the EU. Ukraine, is that a bridge too far, or is it realistic to bring Ukraine in given the conflict?
You can always use conflict for not taking action and for putting off decisions. Cyprus is a divided island, and it was brought into the Ukraine. And brought into the European Union. And Ursula von der Leyen, the EU Commission President, she's gone now today to Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, for probably the fifth time, reassuring Ukrainians of places in Europe. It has to be realistic. And the Ukrainians also will have to realize the extraordinary amount of effort and work they have to do to really modernize their economy, end the corruption, restructure, and the more help they can get from Europe, the more stable it will become. That is the hope.
Judy Dempsey is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, the European Union, 27 countries looking to expand, and the expansion will bring prosperity to the new countries, but at the same time, will challenge the EU's understanding of itself in the world of the 21st century. This is a major trading partner of the United States of America. The stronger the EU, the stronger the US. We're going to turn to a quandary from the Syrian civil war, the apparent willingness of those who live in the region to ignore the war criminal, Assad. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.